Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Welcome, everyone. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here on this April 17, 2020, getting ready to, along with you, enjoy a wonderful study that we will commence in a moment. I am going to, in a few minutes, put up our information on the chat room where you can get a hold of us via our website. And I also encourage you to make use of the spirit of the Blog Talk Radio site episodes page, where you can go and find, you know, just a whole bunch of wonderful programs that we have done in the past. And right now we have 1,137 published programs on the Blog Talk Radio site. Let's have prayer and we'll get started. Father in heaven, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, grant us a beautiful day, a day where we can step aside for a few minutes and learn the truth about salvation, about the kingdom of heaven, and about our coming King. I thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, let's see. I'm just putting Rick up here. Good morning. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
And good morning, Larry.
Good morning. I'm hearing a lot of static in my phone, Dennis.
Yeah, I'm hearing static, too, when you're talking, Dennis. So it must be your mic or something, or connection.
Is it testing 1, 2, 3? Is that static?
It's really clear static now, on? But every once in a while, the static comes through.
Oh, okay. I'm not exactly sure what that is. Anyway, good morning, Dr. Don.
Good morning, and I have no static.
Okay, cool. Well,
how's your attic?
The attic is full of creatures that are trying to escape the virus. Lots of noise up there.
I find it fascinating, again, that we are able to, through the technology that is available to us today, we can all be here talking with one another on Blog Talk Radio as if we're sitting in my kitchen studio. The only thing is you will not be enjoying waffles this morning.
Yeah, so, don't go there.
I won't go there. Okay.
So I was thinking about how I wanted to, a good way to present this topic. It's the thread of the whole cloth, to use a metaphor, where the cloth is the gospel of the kingdom. If I were to ask a question, which I have asked before, how many people believe that the truth is the critical element of salvation?
You don't see it come up very often.
What, the truth or the question?
The truth.
And going in search of the truth Well, the only way that anyone would even entertain a thought of going in search of the truth is if they were to admit to themselves that they don't know the truth. If you believe you know the truth, then why would you go in search of something you already know you have? I'm going to start this study with three verses from Matthew chapter 9. Those three verses are 35, 36, and 37. This is a kind of a concluding observation and statement after the Son of God has done several, not just miracles, but miracles of curing. And, of course, this comes right after his long teaching session. And this is important to note the sequence is what we're going to read. From Matthew chapter 5, starting of verse 1, where he gives the Beatitudes and then he talks about the law, and he talks about this, the new standard, and about offering, and about prayer, and about performance, where he talks about fasting, treasure, the lamp of the body, money, providence, about not judging others, false prophets, true disciple, and how he has amazed the crowds with his teaching. And then in chapter 8, he cures a leper. He cures the centurion's servant. He cures Peter's mother-in-law. He talks about the hardship of the disciples or any disciple of his would experience when he has called them. And then he calmed the storm, and he showed his disciples that even the wind, the rain, and the sea obeyed his voice. That's important. That is probably one of the most important realizations in this whole thing is if we are going to believe, and if we do believe, that it is impossible for us, intelligent, rational, honest, believers, I guess, if you will, would believe that the waves, the rain, and the wind, the tempest, immediately obey the voice of the Lord. We can't. It's impossible for us. That's to me, that's a very critical that we need to come to the realization of that if the storm obeys his voice immediately, then how on earth can we say we can't? And then he goes and casts out demons out of the demoniacs in Gadara. You know what happened, went into the pigs. And then he cures a paralytic. Then he calls Matthew to be his disciple. Then he's condemned for eating with sinners. And he has another discussion on fasting. He cures a woman with a hemorrhage, and you all know that account where she touched the hem of his garment. He cured two blind men, and he cured a demon-possessed person who had made him unable to speak. And then that brings us to the verses, Matthew 9:35-37. Jesus made a tour through all the towns and villages, preaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, aka the gospel of the kingdom, and curing all kinds of diseases and sickness. And here, this next verse is the one that carries a weight of significance, but I think that few really stop to take in what this statement is really saying. And when he saw the crowds, he felt sorry for them because they were harassed and dejected, like sheep without a shepherd. The crowds that were following him, the ones that had been following him from when he started with the Beatitudes and started teaching information that the crowds had never heard before. This was not what their chief priests were telling them. It was completely foreign to them. Remember that, because that is an important point in what I am describing today. Teaching was not the same as the professional teachers, the priests, who had been teaching them, and the fathers of the priests had taught their parents, and the grandfathers of the priests had taught their grandparents, and so on, all the way back to the very beginning, when the priesthood took over the education and the spiritual condition of the nation and the people. They had just heard a completely different explanation of the law, a completely different teaching with the Beatitudes, completely different about the heart and the soul. And they had seen many miracles, miracles of healing, and the wonder of that. They knew that the Messiah had not left in the boat with the disciples, But he was on the shore with the disciples when the crowd arrived, and they were wondering how he got there. And then casting out the demons out of the demoniacs. And then it says, and when he saw the crowds, he felt sorry for them because they were harassed. Harassed? What does that mean, Dennis?
Well, it means they were kind of beset by antagonistic forces, I guess.
Well, and what are those antagonistic forces? Do you think that these people, these crowds, had a feeling that there was nothing they could do to do what was right according to the law? That as hard as they would work at it, their religious teachers continually told them that they were a bunch of lawbreakers.
Well, and yes, you know, this is, I think, one of the reasons why Satan was so successful in putting forth an alternative gospel other than the gospel of the kingdom that Jesus preached, because these poor people, these people who were poor in spirit, had no hope, because if, and they were able to look at their teachers and their leaders and see that they were not keeping the commandments, those people. So if they can't do it, and yet they're proclaiming that they are, how could it possibly be that me as a poor worm, a poor sinner, how could I ever do that? I have no hope of salvation.
And so, and what would these people need to do? Well, they would need to bring in more offerings. They would have to be very careful about tithing. They would have to be very frequent, I guess, with their sin offerings and so on. In other words, it would mean more money for the religious elite.
And less money for them, because they would be spending a lot of their income trying to accomplish what was impossible.
All those who are in the upper echelons of the cabal of evil do this. They scam the masses through lies, condemnations, and various other character traits like that to keep tight control over the people. You know, there's a good example of that right here in this country, the United States. And we're seeing it in states that have Democrats in control. They are using this opportunity to gain greater control and power over the populations of the state. And we just saw how one state, the people in that state, let their tyrannical governor know that they were not going to put up with this, and that was the state of Michigan. It's happening in other states where people say enough is enough. So what I see here is the Son of God was actually trying to bring about a great awakening. The next word is significant in this verse. When he saw the crowds, he felt sorry for them because they were harassed and because they had been harassed, their parents had been harassed, their grandparents had been harassed. This is a long line of harassment of the people. It caused them to be dejected. What does dejected mean?
Well, it's the it's the same. It is a down. How would you put it? It was the same kind of face Cain made.
When Cain was confronted with
the murder. No hope.
It's what comes when you have no hope. And then what he concludes with is, and notice that this is written as if this is what he's thinking. It's not what he's saying. It's what he's thinking. That he saw the crowds and he felt sorry for them because they were harassed, and because of being harassed, they were dejected, like sheep without a shepherd. Sheep without a shepherd are harassed, and there's no shepherd to protect them. There's no shepherd to stand up for them against the harassment. So you see in this sentence is the way the devil works. Through harassment, he creates a sense of despair. No hope. And when people have no hope, they can give and just, okay, this is just the way things are going to be, and I'm not strong enough to overcome this, and, you know, this is what the narrative is, and it must be the truth because it comes from the leadership. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, too. So, first of all, who is the Son of Man, Son of God? Who is he? What is he? He is true shepherd. Now, as a shepherd, the true shepherd of the sheep, he cares about the sheep. That's one of the most important things that we need to understand is he cares for the sheep, yes, but he cares about the sheep. And that the sheep, the people, have just heard his teaching. He's basically given them the whole thing in a very concise package. They have seen him do wonders, healing, calming the storm, casting out demons. Everything that they have not seen done altogether. You know, they've seen some casting out of demons, but he has healed people like the leper that had never been done before, or giving sight to the blind. But maybe there was a feeling that, well, he could be using some trickery here. You know, maybe the two blind men were just playing a part. I'm sure that's what they were told. So you see a battle going on in the minds of the people. And what does it appear that the concern is by the good shepherd, the Son of God? What is his concern? Well, the next verse, I think, gives us the clue. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is rich, but the laborers are few." The harvest is rich. That is a very positive statement. And Dr. Don, you would get this in a moment, I know, especially when I say what I'm about to say, because you'd never realize this. What is the harvest? The harvest.
Well,
go ahead.
That's when the grain, that's when the product is ripe, ready to be taken and put in the barn.
Right. That is at the point where you cut the grain and you take it into the barn. But what is the problem here? The harvest is rich, but the laborers are few. What I see this, when he's using sheep without a shepherd and the harvest is rich, these sheep are lost. And you say, well, they can't, how can they be lost? They've been following him since he started teaching. What is that? Why have they been following him? Because they're hearing something that they recognize, something that makes sense, something that offers it offers hope. It offers hope. Whereas what they've been hearing from their religious teachers has been harassment. You're never good enough. You filthy people. You know, God is doing you a favor to even consider you as worthy of bringing your offering to him. And because of that, the people have felt hopeless. They have no hope. They have nowhere else to turn. They don't have a shepherd. Now here is this person who shows up out of nowhere. He starts teaching as someone with authority, and it challenges what their religious experts have been telling them is the law that they need to keep, or else. He's telling them something that makes sense, something they can relate to. But it's difficult for them because they've been told for so long that if they have any hope of living into the kingdom that the Messiah is going to bring when he comes, they have to be very careful to follow exactly the way that they've been told the law needs to be followed.
And Rick, these people knew that they couldn't do that. they had no hope of that. I can hear Dr. Rich in my mind saying two words. They had no recourse, nor did they have any remedy for their situation.
So when he said, like sheep without a shepherd, is he saying that the religious authority upon whom the responsibility had been placed because of the tribal group they were born into, the tribe of Levi, that those who were charged with being good shepherds were the reason that the people were without hope, and they were the ones who had been harassing the people, and therefore the people were like sheep without a shepherd. They did not have a shepherd. Those who had the responsibility to be the shepherds had totally misused that God-given responsibility. So the people did not have true shepherds. Now they're hearing the voice of the good shepherd, and they like what they hear, but they've been so indoctrinated with the teachings of the religious authorities. And this person who's saying this has already been, his teachings have been rejected by the religious authorities. They have not accepted him into their group, not that he wanted to be in their group, but because of long-standing beliefs and traditions, the people were reticent to just accept what this man was saying and acknowledge that he was the one telling the truth. So what he is doing, and this, I want to say this in the right way. He did not come here to save these people per se. Yes, he did, but he realized that the generation he was talking to, the generation who was hearing what he had to say, that only a few of them would actually accept what he was saying as valid and truthful and change their change their mind about what the teachers of the law had been telling them.
Not only change their minds, but change their perspective on where they fit into this.
Well, indeed. So when he told Pilate that his purpose for coming here to the earth was to testify to the truth, and that all who were of the truth would hear his voice. Now, we know that the religious leaders heard his voice, and we know the people heard his voice, the same people who called crucify him at the end. So when he says, hear his voice, he's not talking about audibly He's talking about spiritually, which is words of understanding, and that's what I was talking about the last time, the words. The words are what are important. The words of the religious teachers are what is in your intellect. You are harassed and dejected, like sheep without a shepherd. If the words of truth are in your intellect, it is because you've recognized the voice of the good shepherd, and you have replaced the lies with the truth. He came here for one purpose, not specifically to save the people that heard him preach, although that's part of it, but he came here to do what verse 37 said. Matthew 9:37. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is rich, but the laborers are few. So ask the Lord of the harvest to send laborers into his." Did you catch that? His harvest. Is that everybody? Or
no,
is
actually,
that
it's,
is that
that seems to be fairly specific.
When a harvest belongs to a certain person, it is the harvest that from the seed that that person has planted, correct? That's their harvest. Anything else, now guess this, anything else, seed that was not planted by the Lord, because he's the Lord of the harvest, are weeds. Correct? Because they're lies. You can't have another person planting another truth, correct? Because truth is singular and absolute. So the seeds that are the words of truth that are planted, the fruits of that harvest belong to God. Seeds that were planted by another, in this case, the religious leader, the scholars and the teachers of the priesthood, they were planting weeds. They were planting lies. So at the harvest, you have the harvest of the true seeds, the seeds that the sower, the Son of Man, has planted. This is from Matthew chapter 13. And you have the seeds that the devil has planted. And the harvest of the Lord is the truth. The harvest of the devil are lies, and those plants are cut down first out of the world, bundled together into piles to be burned. And the truth is the Lord's harvest. But he didn't come to harvest, correct? He came to plant. And that's what he's saying here, inferring here with his disciples, because when you go into the next chapter, chapter 10, what is he doing? It says, Matthew 10, starting with verse 1. He summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits with power to cast them out and to cure all kinds of diseases and sicknesses. Then it names the disciples, and what does he do? He sends them out as missionaries. Does that sound interesting? Does that sound significant? Is he doing something there? He's been a teacher and a miracle worker, and then he sees that the sheep have been harassed, and because of the harassment, are dejected. They're without hope. They have no shepherd. And he sends his 12 out and gives them power to do these same miracles. He sends them out as missionaries into cities to do what he has just done. Do you see that?
You know, there's a word that comes to mind based on what you've just been talking about, and that word is parochial, the definition of which is having a limited or narrow outlook or scope. And if you have a parochial attitude is a mentality that is narrow-minded and not open to new ideas. This describes perfectly this is the system under which these people had been living for centuries. This is the system under which the doctors of the law and the teachers had been operating. And now comes Jesus Christ and his 12, who he sends out to do exactly what he's doing. And he is overturning this parochial mindset. This made the doctors of the law and the teachers really annoyed.
And the Son of God told his disciples, you know, some cities will welcome you and some won't. And the ones that don't, you go outside the city and you shake the dust of that city off of your sandals, off your feet, and go to the next one. But why would a city reject the disciples? Because they would say they are working for the illegitimate child, a bastard, and who had already been disproven by the religious theologians. And it clearly, as their religious leaders were saying, he was working on behalf of Beelzebub. So they didn't want to have anything to do with them. They didn't want to hear a word they had to say. They wanted them to get out of town.
And there is the definition of being parochial.
Correct. Now, at the end of chapter 10, I find one of the most significant statements about following the Son of God. We find that in verse 17, starting there, chapter 10 of Matthew. Anyone who prefers father or mother to me is not worthy of me. Now that in and of itself right there, that is a really outlandish statement when you think about it. So think about it. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be those of his own household. Now that sounds like a pretty morbid purpose for coming. But he's not saying just that. Then he goes on, anyone who does not take his cross and follow in my footsteps is not worthy of me. Anyone who finds his life will lose it. Anyone who loses his life for my sake will find it. Think about that. In conclusion, he says, anyone who welcomes you welcomes me. And those who welcome me welcome the one who sent me. Anyone who welcomes a prophet, because he is a prophet, will have a prophet's reward. And anyone who welcomes a holy man, because he is a holy man, will have a holy man's reward. If anyone gives so much as a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, in that the little ones there is the least ones, because he is a disciple, then I tell you solemnly, he will most certainly not lose his reward. The truth I can't help but think about what's going on in the world right now. What is the truth about this pandemic? Now, I'm going to tell you what my conclusion is based upon my research. I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying that what I have followed is a pattern or a sequence of events that makes sense to me. And we may find out in the near future if it's accurate or not. 4 years ago, Bill Gates stood on the stage and did what is called a TED Talks. TED is a mainly academic lecture series. And they have TEDx, which is kind of a fringe academia. And he walked out on stage in front of the giant video screen with a huge mushroom-shaped cloud taking up the whole screen. Obviously, it was a cloud made by an exploding atomic bomb. And as he walked out on stage, he was pushing a hand dolly with a giant 50-gallon or 100-gallon, it was a very tall barrel, sealed barrel. And he said that when he was growing up in the 50s and early 60s, or throughout the 60s, the world, or at least the United States and probably the rest of the world, were very concerned about mutually assured destruction by an atomic bomb. But he said, I've come here to tell you about a weapon that will do more than an atomic weapon and it's harder to or to prevent. And his talk was on a bioweapon, a virus. A virus could go throughout the world, a particularly virulent virus, and it could kill 90% of the population of the world. So you wouldn't have total annihilation as atomic bomb would do, and then a whole lot of radiation to deal with afterward. But you could destroy 90% of the population, and the 10% that were left would have immunity to the virus, so it would be gone. It wouldn't be effective anymore. And he talked about how his parents had put in a bomb shelter and the 50-gallon sealed drum. They had one of those that had food enough to last for however long the radiation was supposed to last, till they could come out above ground again. And then I see that this same person, he gave another TED talk on bioweapon a couple years ago. And then last October, the corporations that he funded, the Gates Foundation, Johns Hopkins University, and the World Economic Forum or something, did a simulation of a pandemic in New York and how it would be handled. Now, this was last October. Bill Gates had been instrumental in making sure that he got the person to lead, to head the World Health Organization. He and his partners had control of the CCP, which, of course, you know, during the atomic issues in the 50s and 60s, it was Russia, which was, the enemy of the Cold War. In the lab in Wuhan, there was an expert virologist there who was working with bat viruses, who would actually go to a bat cave and get bats and get the viruses from them, and then would specifically work with them to make them highly contagious, highly virulent, and add a protein in there that would be able to connect with the human ACE to receptor site on a lung cell, a pneumocyte. The virus had not been contagious to humans, but it was made contagious to humans because it was an exceptionally virulent virus. Enemy of the deep state cabal, of which Bill Gates is a leader of, is Donald Trump and his military group that have been actively at war against the deep state, defunding them by getting control of drugs and human trafficking and all of that. And they want nothing more in the world than to get rid of him and get their own person back in to where they can get the world back to where they were trying to take it and the one world government. So the virus was released at just the perfect time, they thought, where it would totally eliminate any chance of his reelection. Because if he is reelected, and I believe he will be, they're done for. I mean, even George Soros has said that if he's reelected, their whole plan falls apart, and they're, of course, all in trouble. Trouble, yeah. They're going to be in more than just trouble. So what I have told you is the results of my investigation. I can't tell you that is true, but I can tell you it's logical. And it's worth deeper investigation, which, of course, I don't have the tools to do deeper investigation. All I can do is what's out there to the public and putting two and two together. But I'm doing this not so much because of my concern about what is going on in the world, but I'm doing this to demonstrate the importance of at least taking the time and putting forth the effort to find the truth and be honest with yourself. If I were to ask for a show of hands of how many people think the truth is important in salvation, I honestly wonder how many people would raise their hands. I honestly wonder how many people think the truth is important at all. If the truth is available to be found. And that's why I went through this little explanation here at the end. Is you won't know whether the truth can be found or not if you don't put forth the effort to find it. If you're satisfied with what you have, then what you have is harassment from the leadership. And harassment causes hopelessness, despair, and despair, defeat. And once you're defeated, there's no going back.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you all for being here today. I encourage you to go to our website here at Blog Talk Radio. And go to the episode page. You can download this program or any number of 1,138 programs that we have recorded here. We encourage you to join us a week from Friday, this last Friday, for another edition of the Bible on Trial. And join us tomorrow for another edition of the Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. On behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis Singh. So long for now. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you all tomorrow.